The Departments of Commerce and Labor have new structures in their offices of the Chief Information Officer, but each agency appears to be headed in a different direction. Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller's here to discuss these changes in the latest edition of his regular series, Inside the Reporter's Notebook. Jason, what are they doing with their CIO roles and how do they differ?
It's interesting because for years, the Labor Department CIO was a political appointee or Schedule C, mostly political appointee, the Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management. And quietly, just in the last, I'd say, a couple months, they moved that hat off of the Assistant Secretary for Management, Michael Kerr, and gave his hat to Dawn Leaf, who is the Deputy CIO. And now she wears the full-on CIO hat. Now, if you remember, Dawn Leaf was named in November 2012 as the Deputy CIO. I had her on my Ask the CIO program. I think you maybe even moderated a panel with her. And all along, she was the Deputy CIO.
Yes.
But if you check out the CIO Council website, and I was told this by somebody else, and that this helped me confirm it, is that now she is considered the CIO of the Labor Department. Now, at the same time, the Commerce Department, which for years and years has been just a CIO, not the a career person who's been moved in. Simone Zickman was the most recent one who left back in June. But when he left, Steve Cooper came in, and Steve Cooper got named as a political appointee. Now, I'm told by others that some positions, some SES positions, can be a career position or a political position. So not necessarily a Schedule C position.
I see.
But either or. And in this case, the Commerce Department decided to go with the or and made Steve Cooper a political appointee. Now, what does this mean in the overall scheme of things? It may mean nothing except for the fact that I was told by a former CIO who held one of these positions that for years they wanted the access to the secretary, the deputy secretary, and only because they were a political appointee, they got it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, other CIOs have for years said, well, if I don't have access, then how do I get it? And I think the only way I can get it is by having a seat at the table,
right,
and by being an assistant secretary or something to that effect.
And that really gets at the core of the dialogue that's gone on in this community over the past, I would say, especially half decade, but longer than that. I mean, since Clinger-Cohen.
And it's at the core of FITERA as well, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act, giving CIOs a bigger seat at the table. And mm-hmm. we've seen OMB memos. We've seen attempts by legislation, whether it was the Clinger-Cohen Act or the eGov Act, to give CIOs more and more power. And here's two agencies that seem to kind of go in opposite directions. Now, again, this is not taking anything away from Labor Department's Dawn Leaf. Okay,
yep.
She has by far been running the organization. But now that she doesn't have that political aspect to her title, does that matter? And the hope is no, because she's a smart person that does a good job.
Well, it may give her some leverage, too, if she's there when the new administration comes in and there's a changeover. She doesn't automatically become one of their people.
Right, because she's a career person. And instead of being the deputy, she would get a new boss. Now, she'll still get a new boss in the Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management, but that's to be expected.
But there's potential continuity there for the rest of the IT shop at the Labor Department.
And that helps. There's one more that's actually in limbo, and that's the Environmental Protection Agency, one of the other few ones that is a Senate-confirmed position. Now, Ann Duncan was nominated back in January 2014, which means EPA actually has not had a full-time permanent CIO in 18 months.
It was Malcolm Jackson that was there before.
And
that,
he left in June of 2013.
Okay.
So 6 months, they nominated someone, and now she's been waiting for a year. But she went through the confirmation process in terms of the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works. They approved her nomination in July. It went to this full Senate. It got stuck there. And on December 17th, the Senate actually sent back the nomination to the White House under part of the Senate rules that basically says, hey, if these were neither confirmed nor rejected, you need to renominate them for in the next session of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
So she will have to be renominated, and potentially one would argue maybe have to go through the question and answer process again. You hope that maybe they wouldn't.
Yeah.
And the same thing applies real quick, Francis, to the Russell Deo, the undersecretary nominee to be the undersecretary for management at DHS.
One would hope that that's the case, but when you have a transition that's happening, I don't understand well enough the process of how that information is held or where it's held. That when you transition from a Senate that's controlled by one party to a Senate that's controlled by the other party, where that information, it very well may be archived in a very logical way that's easy to access for staffers from both parties, but I don't know that that's the case.
Right, and they may also say, well, we're going to ask her different questions now that we're in charge.
Different priorities.
Right, so, and that does play a role. So, you know, you have three CIOs who are kind of, one's in limbo and two are kind of in opposite directions.
My colleague Jason Miller, going inside the Reporter's Notebook, and the edition of Ask the CIO with Dawn Leaf is archived at federalnewsradio.com, along with all of the archives from all of the Ask the CIO programs. You did something cool in the notebook this week. You lined up the top 10 most popular Inside the Reporter's Notebook posts. And I wonder if we could get some insight into the top three. The number one makes sense, and we'll get to that in a minute. You
could
know,
you,
I count
play the countdown?
Well, I count backwards like Casey Kasem did. So number three, you write, it's a little surprising that the June 20th edition came in third place, as it highlighted a CFO Council management alert on the Data Act and a change to the A11 circular. Now, of all the circulars out there, Jason, A11, of course, is one of my favorites.
Really, I enjoy reading A123 personally.
Well, I know you're a big 123 fan.
Exactly.
But, you know, I didn't know there were that many other A11 fans out there.
Well, what's interesting about that was the Data Act got passed. We knew it got passed. And then the CFO Council quietly put out this management alert. And I was lucky enough to get an early copy of it, so to speak. And why that one people went to as many as they did is surprising. Now, maybe, you know, it was just the time of the year, June, before people went on vacation for the summer.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, but that one really stood out to me. Number two for the year was the August 8th edition, which highlighted turnover at specific agencies.
That was a good one.
VA, GSA, and DHS.
Important agencies.
I always like to say the people news. People care about people.
Yep.
And one thing I've always tried to do, and by the way, I don't know if you know this, 3 years I've been doing this notebook now.
Uh-huh.
One thing about this is I think people like to know what people are doing, who's coming, who's going. I always like to tell people that the federal community is a very small community. People know each other. So where person X is going next, that's what they care about.
Yep. People who need people are the luckiest people in the world. And the number one item inside the reporter's notebook for 2014 was September 8th, featuring the lead story of Labor and the General Services Administration spending millions of dollars to buy back financial management systems from GCE, which went bankrupt. They essentially, Labor had to buy its own data back.
Right. Not just own data, but also its own systems. They actually bought their own data back in December of 2013.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, December of 2012. And then nine months later, they had to buy the systems. And this was a fascinating story because this was a financial management line of business, outsource it to the private sector, and poor Labor, things just went bad, not quite from day one, but soon after day one. And this was the culmination of GCE going out of business and Labor going, oh my, we're at the end of the fiscal year and we don't have a financial management system unless if we get some help, and GSA helping out here and coming up with the money to basically buy back the system.
All right.
So that was fascinating.
The full list of 10 most popular Inside the Reporter's Notebook posts from 2014 is posted right on the homepage, actually, at federalnewsradio.com. One other item in the notebook this week that I wanted to point out, and that is two interesting cyber RFIs that you're writing about. What is DHS looking for, and what does the intelligence community want from industry on these?
These are both fascinating RFIs, and this is one of those times when you just happen to go looking at FedBizOps, which I'm going to get on my soapbox for 10 seconds.
Wow.
Worst website in government. I'm telling you that right now.
Out
of all of them. And I did a tweet out to GSA saying, please fix it. That's my soapbox for 2015.
Uh-huh.
So what Homeland...
How'd that work out for you, by the way?
Mary Davey retweeted me. I appreciate that.
Wow. Okay.
So Homeland Security Department put out one for, okay, what comes after continuous monitoring? And they're calling this program the EASE program, Enterprise Automated Security Environment. And the concept here is really to say, how can we really look at the security practices, because we can't prevent attacks. We know they're going to come.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we remain resilient? And then how do you also create a healthy environment that is more secure and anticipate in many ways what the attacks could come at? And then how can we respond more quickly? So that RFI is fascinating. We have more details and a link to it on federalnewsradio.com.
Yep.
And then real quick, I know the Intelligence Advanced Research Project Activity, IARPA, has an RFI for their CAUSE program. This is a cyber attack automated unconventional sensor environment. And this is interesting too, because it's looking at software to help forecast methods and detect emerging phenomena to help cyber defenders against potential attack paths. So they're basically saying, what do we have now that could be exploited for an attack in the future? And how do we put a stop or at least fix those holes or vulnerabilities or potential ones based on where the attack vectors are coming from now, where they'll come from in the future, and how things will change? So both of these are coming up. The IARPA is actually hosting an industry day January 21st here in Washington. And potentially, they said both could end up in RFPs or solicitations or broad agency announcements of sorts. So keep an eye out for two very interesting projects.
Quick note, we're almost out of time. And you have this nugget at the end of this segment about the IARPA and DHS RFIs. You write, OPM reapproving Schedule A hiring authority for 1,000 cyber jobs at the Homeland Security Department. That strikes me as pretty significant.
This is, and I'll give credit to my our colleague Jared Serbu for finding this in the Federal Register. And this came out just, you know, earlier, December 30th. Basically, they says DHS has a full year to hire 1,000 more people under Schedule A. And what Schedule A allows them is to bring people in more quickly and then can also address the salary issue potentially, which is a big challenge for cybersecurity. They had this Schedule A authority previously. And last count we heard, now this is a couple years old now, was that they brought in about 600 cyber experts. Mm-hmm. So they're getting approval again to bring in another 1,000 just this year. So if you're looking for a cyber job, DHS is hiring.
I am not, and I'm terribly unqualified, but I know a lot of people are, and it's a great place to work, and I think it's very significant that they continue to have these hiring authorities. Thanks, as always, my colleague Jason Miller.
Always a pleasure.